And when you think about all the things that are connected to the internet, that becomes very dangerous in a crisis.
We have to leave it there. George Beebe of the Quincy Institute and Medea Benjamin of Code Pink. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
And it is 6 o'clock exactly. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook, possibly on 90.1 FM, more likely on 107.3 FM, but in all likelihood on WUSB.FM on the Internet. Thank you, Internet. It's time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm over here.
Yeah.
You see me, right?
I see you, yeah.
Okay. No, yeah, I'm checking in.
I hear you, too.
Yep.
I can even smell it. No, I'm kidding.
Whoa.
Oh, boy. A little levity is what's needed
today. I think it might be that board you're manhandling over there.
Yeah, it's a good board. Good board. No joke. We still are not broadcasting on our normal frequency at its normal power.
The word that came to mind is faintly. We're broadcasting faintly.
Yeah, we can be faintly heard. And, you know, I'm not a technical person. I don't understand a lot of things. But what I do get out of this is our chief engineer, Frank, who's a veritable soothsayer. He's able to make all kinds of things happen that shouldn't happen. That really, really shouldn't happen. I mean, just thinking about the things that... But the point is, in this particular case, what he's done is just rigged it up in a way that we're able to be heard faintly, even though we don't have a working transmitter. It's got something to do with a chain of megaphones, I believe, all throughout the South Shore going up Nichols Road, and they're like placed equidistant from each other and their network. So it's sort of like that Occupy Wall Street thing with a human megaphone, except they're real megaphones, and that's how you hear us. I think that's, if I understood the explanation correctly, that's what's going on at 90.1 FM.
Yeah, it's sort of, they're basically small amphitheaters.
Yeah.
And there is a conical shape that the I guess he's calling them micro audience.
That's what we have now is a micro audience.
That's right. And they receive a signal,
mm-hmm.
and then they retransmit it. And
yeah.
that goes over several micro hops.
Right.
And each micro hop adds a little bit of latency, a little delay.
There's a little bit of delay now.
That's true. And it cascades a bit.
So our show actually takes an hour to begin. And by the time it begins, it's over. Yeah. That was explained to me by a few people, actually. So, yeah. That's where we are right now. Still broadcasting on 107.3 in that little area of Stony Brook where, you know, we try to improve our signal. But right now, we're still trying to... it's a two-step process. We're trying to get a temporary transmitter just to get us going at a bigger fraction of our power, and then replacing the transmitter, the 31-year-old transmitter that finally gave up the ghost a few weeks ago. And when we do that, we'll be back at 100% power, and we'll be able to reclaim all those listeners, hopefully, that are waiting for us to come back.
We really appreciate everyone who has contributed to the spring fund drive.
Except no one's contributed $60,000 that we need in one fell swoop. So if you have that amount lying around, you want some really happy college students at Stony Brook and a bunch of community members and people like that, and maybe your name engraved on a wall or something like that, please, WUSB.FM is our website. The actual fundraiser is over, so we're not taking phone calls anymore, but you can still pledge online.
Yeah, I was going to bring this chuck wagon that is a conversation back around to that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically say that we really appreciate everybody's contributions and excitement for broadcast radio and the spirit of WUSB here on Long Island and the great campus of Stony Brook University. We're, as I understand it, we're going to be, you know, custom ordering and having something built specifically in the long term, and it's a big undertaking. But the operational stuff doesn't stop, the day-to-day stuff. So all of those thank you gifts are going to be assembled and sent out, and we'll be sending invoices and stuff. That's such a success and so important to community efforts, and the transmitter will work that out. We can't go to a big box store though and just pull down, you know, a couple thousand watts.
Yeah, it doesn't work
from the discount store. No, it's a big deal, and everybody's working really hard to ameliorate.
Maybe you work at a radio station, another big commercial radio station. You have a backup transmitter you're not using or that you're upgrading, and around 5,000 watts or something, you can send it our way, and
we will
nice
bring
tax deductible donation.
Yeah, we'll bring a trailer or something.
Yeah, we'll do all the heavy lifting,
or some wheels, or figure out a way, a wheelbarrow, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. We'll take a couple trips, but absolutely, if you have a broadcast transmitter, FM transmitter, we're in the market for one. But no, seriously, we're working on the new equipment, and really happy at everyone who is a sustaining donor to WUSB and who contributed and will contribute at our next fund drive.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we have conversations with people. None of us are used to this, doing radio when we don't have a radio signal to speak of. It's basically, well, can't you just ask your listeners? Well, yeah, that's the problem. You can't reach the listeners without the signal. That's, I understand that's hard to grasp sometimes because we're not used to that. But honestly, we can't, it's, you know, like that whole WKRP thing. You can't announce you're off the air on the air. You can't do that. It's important to get the word out in different ways. And that's why we have the internet. Thank God for the internet. That's where I think we reach most people right now, which is still a fraction of what we usually reach.
It's a great reminder of having diverse modes to get the message out and update people. And of course, we're using those, and hopefully everyone listening is taking advantage of that. Of course, our worldwide reach is, much celebrated. We love hearing from listeners out there and everyone, that, you know, like the translator itself, local to, just the sort of Stony Brook area, the immediate vicinity of the campus, you get a great signal, FM signal on 107.3.
Until the conservative fascists take it over from Connecticut.
Well, there's a danger of a little bit of overlap there. But you know what? A lot of the efforts and the way we're doing things, we're looking at that. And it's exciting because it's really accelerating a lot of what we had planned.
Those swine.
You know what? We'll build a megastructure over the entire campus. And it'll be a giant transmitter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, but that's sort of why we were asked to leave campus so many years ago, because we were transmitting too much in our old location, and we had to go to a better location, but a much more expensive location.
We'll have a swarm of wire-bending robots build a kilometer-high superstructure several times the size of the hospital, and we won't have to use as much wattage because of the height, right?
I admire your dream.
And we will be in the way of air traffic. That's what this station can do.
That is the goal, after all. It always has been the goal.
Yep.
Okay, well, yeah, hey, just to update people, we have tested negative for COVID as of Saturday, I think. So even though I still have a cough, I'm not sure what that's all about. I got to write to the manufacturer about that. I've basically symptom free for the most part, and we're both negative, and we can live our normal lives again.
I'm as negative as ever.
Yeah, back to your old self, and it's something, because it really does seem like everybody is getting it now that didn't get it before. All the people that were really careful, it's your turn now, and it's fortunately it's not too severe in all the cases that I've heard of so far. So I'm not saying get it over with. You know, if you can avoid it, still try, because it is a real pain to go through this. But nothing like what so many other people have gone through, especially the early part of the pandemic. It's good to have it behind us. I'm thinking again that that second booster, though, just to keep things safe a little bit longer, and hopefully it dispels further. Hopefully we don't have to deal with this much longer.
Yeah. Certainly, I think it helps sharing the experience you're having, being kind and considerate to other people, especially in close proximity, checking in on people, especially folks that you know may have been contracting or exposed to it, and with yourself, you know, make sure you're just occasionally working on your own well-being and so forth, maybe a little extra because of some of these more mysterious illnesses and so forth, but it is something that I think those of us that have availed themselves of vaccinations and treatments can survive, and that is a positive thing to be able to say right now. So, best of luck to everyone out there.
Yeah, definitely, and we will continue to be here for you, whether you like it or not. WUSB and Off the Wall. Okay, shall we talk about the elephant that's at the doorway here? Last night some rather dramatic news made its way to all of us in the form of an unprecedented leak out of the Supreme Court. Applause all around for whoever did that, because that, my friends, is a statement. That is an action. That is something that is so necessary, something we have to be doing more of. And it just shows you the magnitude of what we are on the precipice of. And I'm talking about the overturning of Roe versus Wade by our, I heard a great phrase earlier today, by the extreme court, because that is what they have turned into. And, you know, it's not just a question of disagreeing with the court. It's a question of the court disagreeing with the country. If you look at any poll right now, it's at least 2-1 against overturning Roe versus Wade. In other words, the vast majority of people support a woman's right to choose. The Supreme Court right now does not. The Supreme Court basically has been hijacked in a couple of different ways by not allowing President Obama to have his Supreme Court pick, by having that basically blocked, by then turning it around and in the exact same scenario, allowing it to go through when Trump was in power. Trump gets to pick three people on the Supreme Court. The latest was listed as unqualified. One of the Supreme Court justices was a sexual predator who was basically not even investigated. You know, this, we can go on and on about how the court has been downgraded significantly. But basically what we have now is a court that does not represent the United States. It represents Trump and his ilk. And, you know, all the hateful, spiteful people out there who want to bring the country to a place that it has not been in a long, long time. I've even seen people, not bots, people saying, you know, this is a victory. Next is Brown versus Board of Education. Literally, they want to turn back segregation. They want to get rid of gay marriage. All the things. Did you think they were joking? Did you think we were joking when we were warning people about this? It's real. And the only way we're going to get through this is to turn out at the polls on election day. Absolutely. And turn out in the streets. Be loud, be obnoxious, be visible. You know, it's sad to think how many people believe that doesn't work, or that say, you know, I tried that once and it didn't change anything. You can't try it once and expect anything to happen. You have to be there constantly. You have to be a force. That's what the Republicans understand. They're always there. They're always loud and obnoxious, and they get their way even though they're minority. You know, the rest of us have to start learning how to play that game and stop turning on each other. You know, we don't agree on everything. We don't agree on a lot of things, maybe. But on this, I think we do. And on this, we have to unite and be tactical. Maybe this is a galvanizing moment where people will see this. But, you know, I've seen too many people saying, you know, the Democrats had the House, they had the Senate, and they had the presidency, and they couldn't do anything, so why should I ever vote for them again? Well, you fool, because if you don't vote for them again, you're going to get Republicans to do more things like this, a lot worse. And just because you have 48 Democratic senators, which basically gives you a 50-50 tie with the Republicans, doesn't mean you're going to get anything you want because of the way the Senate is structured. You know, there's a very slim majority. It's not enough. You need more. You need more Democrats to be elected. You need a stronger majority. Just because you didn't get it the first time doesn't mean you give up. If you do, you might as well just turn Republican yourself and just embrace all of this, because that's what they're doing. They know what they're doing. We have to be a little bit more conscious of strategy. And not always getting exactly what we want right away. So, you know, with that in mind, at every opportunity, defeat these people. Turn out. Be loud. Be in their face. There's nothing wrong with showing up. And you know, we just seem to be so cynical now, where it doesn't work. It won't make any difference. I saw somebody on Twitter say, yeah, 20 million people on the street won't make a difference. Really? You think so? You think 20 million people on the street won't make a difference? May I acquaint you with the Vietnam War and how that was brought to a close? People in the streets. How about the Arab Spring? Huh? How about the Berlin Wall tumbling and the whole Iron Curtain being dismantled? You think that was a vote? No. People in the streets. You need that. You absolutely have to have that. It matters. Elections matter, too. Elections matter a lot. But you can't just rely on one form of fighting back. You have to fight back on so many different levels. And I really, really hope we get that this time. Because this is the price. We are seeing now a preview, a really scary preview of what the price is when we don't have our act together.
Yeah, and we've been seeing it in places like Texas, these little experiments. And the fact that there are already people that have had to leave areas, have had to turn to services from outside that state. This is happening. It's been burgeoning. And it's just the irony and hypocrisy of, you know, extremism being a label cast upon Democrats now. But across...
But by who, though? The minority. It's only 25% of people support this kind of thing.
Yeah, and what kinds of precedent like is the current administration setting and overturning? You know, this is definitely a real scary moment, and my heart goes out to so many people that are going to be affected by this, women specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I think about people in my life and people I know, you know, people I don't know. My listening of women, I think, is different, especially today. Just this tension it's incredible, and it affects men too. And I think we need to be listening. Everyone needs to be listening, but also, as you said, speaking out. Really, in enormous numbers, with confidence about what this means, the implications.
It's, you know, it's really dramatic. Excuse me, it's dramatic because the Supreme Court is broken. It's turned into a political mouthpiece. You know, when Roe versus Wade was first enacted back in 1973, the Supreme Court was majority Republican appointed. Yeah, think about that. Things have changed so much over the decades, where basically the political party of the president who basically nominated justices, that's who wins, nobody else, when they actually get nominated. The whole thing is it's a joke. It's not a neutral body anymore. It's completely political. And I just, you know, I just wonder if it has any relevance anymore. It's really sad.
Yeah, and this is one of the oldest sort of culture war triggers that has been used. It's sort of a political hyperbole. This topic over and over again has been thrown about in politics as a lightning rod for polarization. And now we're in this sort of epoch of intense polarization, and here comes this tried and true issue all rushing back in an instant through this branch of our own government being wielded against, as you said, a public sentiment that is not for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it could be worse. Imagine where we'd be right now if Trump had been reelected and he got yet another Supreme Court justice picked. It would be, so much further gone. We wouldn't be looking at elections, I don't think. There would not be that option. I can't even imagine. And, if there's any positive of this, it's that this might wake us up. I think I already said that, but I sure hope that we don't forget. And, you know, just to let people know about the rest of the world, our neighbors to the north, I just looked this up because I was curious. You know, they have the same issues. Abortion in Canada is legal at all stages of pregnancy, regardless of the reason, and is publicly funded as a medical procedure under the combined effects of the Federal Canada Health Act and provincial health care systems. That is normal. That is sanity. That is where we should be. And the only reason we're not is because of the unbalanced influence that a minority extremist faction has due to weaknesses in our system that allow them to take over. We have to fight back. Maybe we have to play dirty, but we have to win, or the price is just too much for us to even comprehend. All right, well, there's going to be more on this, obviously, everywhere, and hopefully so. Let's just not give up. The White House Correspondents Association dinner took place last Saturday. For the first time in, what, 6 years, a sitting president attended because we have a president who can make fun of himself? Wow, how about that? It didn't happen last year because of COVID, but all the years before that, Trump just wouldn't have it. And it's funny because Governor DeSantis from Florida, you know, the ranking fascist there, was invited, refused to go. These people have no sense of humor. They cannot make fun of themselves. They cannot take criticism. They cannot take democracy. They really can't. But it was just good to see good-natured joking. You know, people not getting bent out of shape. And Biden can dish it out as well as take it. And that's what you need. You need that in any leader, somebody who can take a joke. And when you're with people that can't take jokes, you're with the wrong people. I don't care what side you're on. I see this, you know, with people I agree with a lot. People don't have a sense of humor. I'm not comfortable. Not comfortable with them. If you can't make fun of yourself, or you can't let other people make fun of you, you have issues. You have issues that you need to address before you actually start doing important things, because they're not going to be well thought out. And Trevor Noah did a pretty good job basically dishing it out to everybody, I think, which is what we need.
I thought he was really shiny. He rose to that obligation and definitely was like MC, you know, was able to hold that and go through a frenzy of material. So that was well executed.
Yeah. First time in 6 years, amazing. Bit of fun, you know, before the storm happened. Okay, what else we got here? Some other stories. Okay, there's been a bunch of space things going on lately. And I see this story from space.com. It confuses me a little bit. It's called SpaceX just flew its fastest Dragon astronaut trip to the space station ever.
Okay. Let me guess how long.
Go ahead, guess.
15
hours and 45 minutes.
Okay.
SpaceX launched the crew 4 astronauts on a new Crew Dragon capsule called Freedom and Falcon 9 rocket from Pad 39A of NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Do they have that many pads? 39A? So they have 39, and then they have letter designations on top of that. So they must have, like, several hundred pads.
I think it has more to do with coordinates or latitude or something.
Oh, like airports.
It might be something like that. Okay, but you know what? Maybe they do have 40 pads down there. I'll have to get back to you.
You know, Grand Central Station has 100 tracks. So if they can do that, I think anything's possible.
Yeah, what do I know?
Yeah,
what else?
I don't know anything
this?
About
so,
this.
So they got up there in 15 hours.
That's the part that confuses me.
That's Florida. Johnson?
The shortest SpaceX flight ever. I thought they went faster than that. The shortest SpaceX flight came just ahead of a spacewalk by two Russian cosmonauts outside the space station on Thursday. That was funny. They locked them out for a little while just to, like, you know, make them you know, salute the Ukrainian flag, and then they got him back in.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. What?
Good-natured fun, okay, up there in space.
No, say it again. It's stuck. I don't know.
Here it is. Okay, all right. Now it makes a bit more sense. While Crew 4 Dragonflight was SpaceX's fastest flight to the station, it wasn't the fastest crewed flight ever. That title is still held by Russia's Soyuz spacecraft, which holds the Guinness World Record for the fastest time to the station with a 3-hour, 3-minute trip in October 2020. Okay, so let me just say, space.com, how is this a story? All right, so SpaceX made it up there in 15 hours and 45 minutes, but the Russians can do it in 3 hours and 3 minutes. I think that's the story, that we're so damn slow. What do they know that we don't? I mean, come on. How high is the space station? Do we know this?
200 miles.
Is it 200 miles? How does it take 16 hours to go? I mean, is this the Long Island Railroad or something? How is it that slow to just go a couple of hundred miles? And you're in a rocket ship. They go fast, you know. They go pretty damn fast.
It seems like maybe the Kazakhstan-based Soyuz rocket is perhaps got more thrust and gets up there quick, gets to a high altitude quicker.
I think.
And has less orbits.
And this goes back to high school, because I was warned that if I didn't pay attention to geometry, you know, it would bite me in the ass later. And I think that's what's happening here with all of us. I think if you know your geometry, you can figure it out that the space station is going to be passing over at a certain time. If you launch and you're going at this particular angle and it's going at that angle and you're going at these particular speeds, solve for X.
It's astrophysics.
All right, that's algebra.
Yeah, that's algebra.
Well, regardless, I don't even know the difference. But the point is, it's 254 miles away. It shouldn't take 15 hours and 45 minutes. It shouldn't even take 3 hours and 3 minutes. I'm glad the Russians figured out how to do that. But what I really don't understand is, why can't SpaceX just do that? It's not like Russia is closer. You're basically taking a particular route somehow. And I don't know. This is not a story. 15 hours and 45 minutes. We should not be proud of this. Don't encourage them. What was it before? What was it? 3 days? How long? I mean, how is this fast?
I remember that when it did speed up. They're like, oh, we found this new way.
We found a shortcut.
Do you remember that story?
A shortcut into space. Wow.
That was hilarious. Uh-huh. It was like, okay, well, that's something. And then, yeah, but maybe there's, like, things they have to watch out for.
Like,
you know,
what?
Like
aliens?
I don't know, like some TV satellite that's in the way or something.
You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson was on a talk show not too long ago, and he basically, he kind of emphasized what I'm saying here, in that it's not so exciting that they're going to the space station, because if you look at a globe and you put two dimes on top of the globe, that's how high up they're going. It's not high at all. The satellite that we watch TV through, that's high. That's 45,000 miles up there. Why don't they go up there? Why don't they go that far?
Okay, I got it. I think I know.
254 miles, that's how far they go. Go farther, come on, space is big. And there's less to bump into the further you go.
Okay, so it's probably not that they're bumping into TV satellites, but maybe, I think I got it, maybe it's a scenic route. It's like leisurely.
You know, in space, the scenery is pretty much similar. It's probably a better view the further you go, too. I don't know.
That is a really Earth-centric attitude.
Oh, forgive me for being Earth-centric. That's, you know, the only planet I've been on so far.
You know, the universe doesn't revolve around you.
I've been told that. Okay, you pick Starbucks or Pope Francis. Which story do you want?
The Pope.
You want the Pope?
Yeah, let's go
okay,
Pope.
You're going to regret this.
What did he do? I heard he was going to drive a bus or something. He's like a bus driver.
Well, maybe he should do that. I don't know. Might be more qualified. Well, since the beginning of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Pope Francis has basically floated the idea that he wanted to take a trip to Kyiv to try to broker a ceasefire. But now he says he'd rather go to Moscow to try to talk some sense into Vladimir Putin.
Okay.
Who he has not outwardly condemned in the nearly 3-month-old war, and only did so lightly in a lengthy interview with an Italian newspaper. If anyone knows why I still have a cough after testing negative, please let me know, because this is really annoying me. I feel that before going to Kyiv, I must go to Moscow. He said the real scandal of Putin's war is NATO barking at Russia's door, which he said caused the Kremlin to react badly and unleash the conflict. I'm sorry, Pope, but that's not right. That's just, you're blaming the victim, not the aggressor. You're saying the aggressor was provoked. It's just as wrong, regardless of the reason for unleashing all this hell on innocent people. And you know what? Last I checked, individual countries have the right to make up their minds what alliances they want to join. And if Ukraine wants to join NATO, they should have the right to at least try. I don't think NATO is basically barging in and giving special 2-for-1 offers to certain countries. In fact, I think the application process is rather difficult. In fact, they didn't make it the first time, I think, and a bunch of countries didn't. And if anything proves that you need an alliance, it's this kind of action right here. So I don't know, caving to them. I don't think that's a good option at all. And
this capitulation is almost, in my view, as heinous as the atrocities taking place in Ukraine at the hand of the Russian invaders.
Well, I mean, it's not as heinous, but it leads to more of the same.
It protects it. It gives cover to it. It is so foul.
Yeah,
so incredibly
and
foul.
And cowardly. Come on, you're a pope. You should know something
about it. To capitulate to the Russian Orthodox, whatever religious things are going on in the background, or to adopt this and try to lend the credibility, if there is any, in the Catholic Church to the Russians in this situation, it's a very sad day for that so-called faith.
It really is. It really is. I wasn't expecting that for him. So
I hope that's just a ploy to, like, you know, get in country and do the backslapping that he's planning on doing with old Vladimir, but Putin, that is. But bad move, Pope.
You wish you had picked the Starbucks story, don't you?
Yeah, Starbucks.
Okay, well, this is slightly better. Massapequa Starbucks. Massapequa is down on the South Shore by the Nassau-Suffolk border. Massapequa Starbucks has become the first on Long Island to unionize following a successful vote in favor of organizing the local coffee shop on Tuesday. The final count, 19-8 in favor of labor organizers. It's funny that so few people make a headline, but it's important. Massapequa Village Square Starbucks. They voted to join the Workers United New York, New Jersey Regional Board, which is an affiliate of the Service Employees International Union. Baristas at a Great Neck store location that also had their union votes tallied Tuesday voted against unionizing 6-5. Yeah. Terry cast the vote that tipped them over, and she's got a lot of explaining to do. But we'll get into that later. Worker organizers there had also sought to join Workers United and were the first on the island to petition for a union vote earlier this year. A spokesman for Workers United said the union would be challenging the outcome of the unsuccessful vote, as it currently has previously filed 22 unfair labor practice allegations against Starbucks management. Great Neck and Massapequa employees, along with those at a location in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, began mail-in voting in early April. The Bensonhurst workers approved the union. Do you want to know what the vote was for Bensonhurst in Brooklyn?
Sure.
Want to guess?
10.
10 to what?
To 3.
How about 17-0?
Wow.
Yeah, that's Brooklyn for you. Okay. Brooklyn will join the union. Drop of a hat. As of late last week, more than 250 Starbucks locations across the country have begun publicly pushing for a union vote since workers at two Buffalo stores successfully unionized late last year. 41 stores have already unionized. Now, there's a Starbucks on campus in Stony Brook, I believe in the library. I don't know what the situation is, if you're students or what, but you know what? Come on. It's the State University of Stony Brook. We expect labor practices to be fair and progressive. So let's get the paperwork started. I want to see a unionized Starbucks on campus. Yeah. I assume it's still there. It's been years since I've been there.
Yeah, this whole movement is really inspiring, and it's, I think, important for people to realize that a lot of the stigma and taboo around unions has come from a long history of unions in this country that have been slowly diminished, and maybe a lot of those stereotypes and things that have been said about it don't necessarily have to be what your union is now. You can make what you want out of a place, especially a place that does not have that kind of organization. And the people designing things like this and helping others design the kinds of unions that will help them is really crucial work, because it establishes so much of your power, your labor power, that collective bargaining ability, and really thinking through the specific needs in that place of work, when most of the employees barely have time to complain about it ordinarily, you know, when they're doing shift work or when you're, you know, not represented, you're trying to make ends meet, or you're maybe not making enough and have to work another job or under the table somewhere. So, you know, if you were getting paid something fair, you wouldn't have to do that, you know, in the same way, and maybe would have time to be going and writing suggestions or being a better manager or whatever.
Yeah, I could see store owners, tiny, you know, mom and pop shops, being a little apprehensive if their employees decide to join a union. Because, you know, they're struggling to make it in the first place, and it kind of feels like it's antagonistic. But what I don't get is when these massive chains that are doing so well, Starbucks, Amazon, they're doing incredibly well, when they are opposed to it, you know, there's more to this than just, no, we prefer you do it a different way. They really are afraid of the power of labor, of people who know their rights. You know, it's not like Starbucks or Amazon are going to go out of business because their workers are unionized, or Google, or, you know, any of these massive companies.
Well, it's the sheer numbers. Mm-hmm. They are outnumbered by their laborers.
Yeah, but
by
that's
definition.
A fact. That's a fact. They are outnumbered, and,
yeah,
and that should mean something.
A small business, yeah, they can afford to be like, oh, I'm a little hesitant, but, you know, I could still lift them and throw them out the door if I had to, you know, but, like, if you have 10,000 employees, they might take you on, and it might be a different scenario.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically comes back to the same thing that I was saying about the opposition to what the Supreme Court is trying to pull. You know, you can say a million people in the streets won't make a difference, but I guarantee if there are a million people in the streets and they're chanting something against you or your position or what you do, it's going to have an effect. It's going to change you. I mean, just go to Paris when they decide, you know what, we're going to add 5 minutes to the work week. And they turn out hundreds of thousands of people. They are loud, they're obnoxious, and it gets turned back because of that. Not because of a referendum, not because of, you know, what happens in Parliament. That does matter, but getting out on the streets, that matters too. Don't ever think it doesn't. And too many of us say, doesn't make any difference. That's what they want you to say. That's exactly what they want you to say. You don't have any power. You do. You have so much power. You just have to use it.
Yeah, especially when it builds sentiment and you have the public on your side and you are really standing there and thinking of the details and the issues and doing a good job at union organizing, because you know, again, those taboos, the stigma about unions, we don't need that. We need people to be taken care of now and taking care of one another so that they can make it to work and be productive. And I think that there's just so much power in that organization and the sentiment, because you needed to get that groundswell. Otherwise, you have these big companies that are, as I was kind of indicating, doubly and, you know, 10 times more afraid because they're outnumbered, because it's a strong, powerful thing. And with deep pockets like Amazon, they think they can just sort of wait it out or outspend, and they have all these, like, outside labor consultants and so forth. But I think the attitude, that spirit of antagonism is wrong. I think that it will it's going to cost them more. And I'm not just talking about money. Like, resisting these attempts, not being supportive, if you have a large organization of people joining a union, and then working with that union,
mm-hmm.
and coming up with ways to be efficient enough to be able to afford it, whatever's being asked of, and ultimately becoming a better, more efficient, more productive enterprise in the long run. I feel like spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to resist something that will ultimately be better for the quality of life of the people that you're counting on when, you know, orders are in and you can't keep up, those are the people that make the difference, you know. And when you kind of have a shift in that mindset of being antagonistic and dumping money into resisting the attempts instead of seeing that this empowers the people that you're going to be counting on. So I don't know. That's kind of what I'm seeing in this. In this emerging issue and changing issue a little bit.
All right. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, there are two Long Island groups that have been listed as anti-government. Well, I don't know if anti-government is so bad, but it's how you're anti-government, I think, that really matters. Southern Poverty Law Center tracks racism, xenophobia, and far-right militias in the United States. So the two groups on Long Island, get ready, Nassau County, Long Island Mutual Assistance Group. No, they're not an insurance company. They're a fascist organization. And Suffolk County, right here in Suffolk County, we have Long Island Loud Majority. Yeah, I never heard of them either. They're not as loud as they think they are. They're among 488 extreme anti-government groups that are active, that were active in 2021. That's according to a report by the SPLC. A leader for Long Island Loud Majority says it's helping turn out votes for GOP candidates. Not too surprised there. Leaders from the groups disputed the Law Center's descriptions of their organizations. Loud Majority supporters are patriots tired of watching their liberties eroded away by an ever-expanding government. According to its website. Well, I've got a question for you, Long Island Loud people. What do you think of the Roe versus Wade thing? That seems to fall right into that definition. But somehow, I bet you're not opposed to that. I bet you embrace the government getting involved. Yeah, you bunch of hypocrites. Loud Majority is more political in its interest and involvement, according to Law Center researcher Rachel Carol Rivas. It has made what we would call threats of political violence around issues of vaccines, masking, COVID restrictions. But you notice these people, they are dead set against lifting Article 42, which would allow refugees to come into this country as they were allowed to before COVID hit. Yeah, COVID doesn't exist except when it comes to refugees. Then we're going to keep those restrictions in place. I'm sure hypocrites. There's also anti-LGBTQ activity and targeting students and schools around issues of education and inclusive communities. Those preoccupations reflect what the Law Center said was a widespread shift by similar groups after the January 6th insurrection. Loud Majority co-founder Sean Farash, 31 years old of West Babylon, disputed the Law Center's characterization of his organization. We're not anarchists. We're not revolutionaries. We're certainly not violent, he told Newsday. In an email, Suffolk Police said the department knew of 18 events organized by the group since September 2020 with no reported criminal activities. Loud Majority was formed in 2020, the year Farish used Facebook to organize a COPEG to Shirley convoy to support then-President Donald Trump. The group later mobilized parents around issues of school masking. Because we stayed loud, they have chosen to capitulate to us, he said in a podcast last June after the state lifted an order that required masking in schools. You know, that's not how it played out, but just think of that phrase. Because we stayed loud, they have chosen to capitulate to us. We could learn a lesson from that. You know, stay loud like we are advising, because it does have an effect, whether you're right or wrong. As for group membership numbers, Farash recited social media statistics. His social media presence includes a TikTok account, where his 285,000 followers can watch his Trump impressions. and a Twitter account with 84,000 followers. On that platform, he has likened the Smithtown School superintendent's behavior to Stalin's, mused about the tyranny of mask mandates, and made repeated false claims that the 2020 election was stolen. In recent weeks, he has tweeted about the gender hoax, calling several prominent transgender women still men. You know, the usual ugliness. And that is the reality that is basically around us, constantly. In September, Loud Majority organized the Stony Brook University vaccine mandate protest with conservative group Turning Point USA. Loud Majority used those events to network and access a unique demographic that has come around to patriotic ideals on the college campus. What they get from us is access to New York, which everybody thought was a lost cause. They've endorsed school and library board candidates in Smithtown, and, of course, Lee Zeldin. Yeah, they posted pictures on his Facebook account of those of Lee Zeldin smiling alongside Farage and others in the Loud Majority. State Republicans have named Zeldin as their designee for governor. They're all related. They're all part of the same thing. It's so ugly. It's so terrible. Loud Majority members cozy up to politicians to flex their power and appear bigger. The members of SPLC are concerned about growth of the group over the last year and hope New Yorkers will take a hard look at what they are being asked to support and get involved in with this group. Now, Lee Zeldin had something to say about this. Yeah, the guy who actually holds power as our elected representative. He said these reports are meant to serve Southern Poverty Law Center's own biased political agenda. He's attacking the Southern Poverty Law Center. Those people who fought against segregation, they're the bad guys. Not the fascists. Yeah, not the hate mongers. The SPLC. Their biased political agenda should not be taken seriously. Conflating someone who is pro-freedom and pro-liberty with the title of anti-government is dangerously un-American. Well, that's what you take issue with. How about what they've said, what they've done? Not a word.
I love how what he's accusing them of is, in true form, a tell of exactly his biased political agenda. So bare, so raw, and just unbelievably obvious and naked hypocrisy.
Definitely true. In Patchogue, outraged elected officials and community leaders are calling for a boycott of a Patchogue restaurant after the owner posted insensitive remarks about Mexican immigration on social media this week that have since been taken down. Well, actually, it was last week. The backlash caused Off-Key Tiki to remove the post and apologize on Facebook for the Cinco de Mayo advertisement that read, ready for this, Kyle? Join us for a little taste of Mexico, might as well, before the whole country immigrates here. Come on, what are you thinking? Did you really think that was going to land well? Off-Key Tiki owner Michael Brummer acknowledged he wrote the ad, which he meant to be tongue-in-cheek. It was a stupid joke. I apologize. The last thing I want to do is hurt anyone's feeling.
Is this right before he closed his business for good?
And I don't know.
Liquidated
it might be.
The kitchen?
People are reading into it something that it was not intended to be. Kind of doesn't matter, though, when you say something like that.
Why even apologize? Just close. You're done.
I'm very much opposed to cancel culture. I don't want someone to lose their livelihood because they did one dumb thing. But you got to learn from this. You got to realize, you know, the restaurant published a lengthy apology. It read in part, for those that were offended, once again, we apologize and invite all to come down on the 5th and join us celebrating this day of diversity and respect for this great holiday assimilation. It kind of turned into a promo. It started as an apology, turned into a promo for business. Something in Phil Ramos of Brentwood said that apology was totally inadequate.
It's lackluster.
His apology is a typical gaslighting. He is just sorry that we misunderstood him.
And he got caught.
There's no way we can spin this any other way but offensive and hateful. Can you imagine how demeaning it is for Hispanic employees to have to work here under those hostile conditions? Listen, I get that and I agree with that, but the guy should not lose everything as a result. He should learn from this. And, let it be a teaching moment. I'm sure there are things that we can learn from here, rather than, there's people that work there as well.
If the food's okay, if it's good, then I'll think about it. But if it's lousy, I mean, why keep it anyway?
Right? It's just, I don't want people to avoid saying things like that out of fear. I want them to avoid saying things like that because it's not the right thing to say.
Read the room, yeah, when there's time and place, and maybe that one's for, when you're working on your stand-up material in the garage or something by yourself.
I really believe in forgiveness. I really like people to learn from their mistakes, and I think we all make mistakes. We can't be too harsh. If someone refuses to learn, though, if they keep doing it, then you come down hard on them. But if someone is contrite and actually seems like they get that they did something wrong, even if they don't express it quite the right way at first, give them a chance to get there. Help them get there. And I think that'll prevent more people from making the same mistake. All right, final story. There's not going to be any glamping on the Wheatley Heights campus for the Usden Summer Camp for the Arts. Do you know what glamping is?
Yes.
What is glamping?
Glamorous camping.
It's a style of camping that includes beds and other luxuries. How is that camping? That's in your house.
That's right, and that's why it has a different name.
Okay, all right. So after much thought and reflection, Usden Summer Camp for the Arts has decided to withdraw its application for a special use permit, which would have allowed for glamping within the woods of the campus. I think this is in Huntington. Ultimately, it's more important for us to preserve our 55-year relationship with the neighboring communities. Usden provides and will continue to provide an immersive and transformational arts experience for all. Neighbors responded in force and negatively last month to the plan, which would have allowed overnight guests to sleep in temporary tents on the grounds as part of an arts program for adults to raise money for scholarships. United Jewish Appeal Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York, Inc. owns the property on Colonial Springs Road. I guess live and learn. I didn't know what glamping was before today. I'm sure you'll find something else to do instead. Hey, we're out of time. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll be back again next week. Hopefully people will come together, unite, find their power, and not get discouraged, because we're in this together.
And win.
Yeah. Winning, it's in our future. Good night.
Male chauvinist pig engineer.
Right on, sister.